where Shelton comes for news and talk. The Lisa Wexler Show, now on Southern Connecticut's news and information leader, WICC 600.
I'm going to say something very Pollyanna before we get to our next guest, State Senator Tony Wong. And it may rankle you, but I always have the words of my father, the incredibly wise Saul Kamen, in my head. I'm lucky to have been surrounded by a lot of wisdom in my life, but my dad's words come to me a lot. And my father was always, and is still actually, at 92 working, believe it or not, he is. And he was always self-employed. He never had a paycheck since the beginning of law school because in his day and time and thinking, you just went out and started a business. So he started a succession of businesses, and that's how he made a living. And he also became a lawyer, and he had a law practice for many years. And he always said this to me. He always said whenever he heard people complain about paying taxes, he always said to me and my sister privately that it was a good problem to have because it meant that you were earning money. That's what he said all the time. He said he never really complained about, and he lived, he's 92. He's lived with high tax rates, low tax rates, in between tax rates. He also never believed ever, no matter how rich you were, that you should have an offshore account. He thought it was unpatriotic, period, end. Unpatriotic to take the wealth that was granted and given and earned by you because of the extraordinary system of democracy that we have in America and capitalism and repatriate that money elsewhere just to avoid taxes to pay this country back. Maybe that's because he's an immigrant son and he comes from parents who came over the boat in Ellis Island. Very, very strong patriotic American. So when it came to taxes, and it comes to taxes, he always thought it was a good problem to have. It meant you were earning money, so you give a little bit more. His attitude was people have to remember that they're partners with Uncle Sam anyway. We're all partners with Uncle Sam. Let's go back to our show. Tony Wong joins us now. He's a state senator. Is it the 22nd, Tony? I always forget your district. Which district?
The 28th district, Lisa. And it's always great to talk to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Tony. You're an immigrant son, too.
I am. I'm an immigrant myself. And hear that, God bless your dad and so many others that have chosen America to be their homeland. It's the American dream to be able to pursue opportunities to succeed regardless of your background, religion, race. The opportunities that exist in this country are greater than anywhere in the world, and that's why my parents chose to be an American, and I'm grateful to be an American. And yes, you should pay your taxes. That is evidence of a partnership that, in paying your share to contribute to those that are less fortunate and to be able to ensure that we have public safety, infrastructure, education. Those are critical elements in which taxes. What may be the frustration is in some cases, people are extremely frustrated with how their tax dollars are spent. The poor
that's
going on, the misallocation, the lack of transparency and accountability. I think that's where people are more frustrated in the sense that they pay their taxes and it's a partnership with our government. But at the same time, they don't feel as though they have a voice, have a mm-hmm. representation, and they're just not being heard. And that's where democracy comes in, is elected offices to be able to hear that. And I'm listening to Richard at the tail end of your meeting with him.
Yes.
And that's part of the positives of listening to local-based program like what you have at ICC is the fact that you are part of the community, and we're looking to get answers. We can't help everybody, but I'm going to darn well try to help Richard and his grandson.
Good, good, because he just feels that the hike was just extraordinary for this mother and son. I, you know what his real sense is? We're talking with State Senator Tony Wong. You know that the family's been rowing in the right direction. His grandson's been working hard. He got a degree. He did it. And now it seems like the rug is being pulled out under them just when they feel they're getting a little bit ahead. And I think that that's really the sense of frustration. And also, it's just a huge hike from 400 to 1800. It's just such a big number to swallow in the context of a family budget.
Absolutely. And you're looking at one spectrum. And another issue that I'm really involved in and trying to get a better understanding is for some of our elderly that have purchased long-term care insurance to see that rate skyrocket over 100+%.
Okay. All right.
There's so many
things
that we can talk about, Lisa.
Tony. No, Tony, you don't know that you've now just pushed a hot button issue. You don't even know. All right. Ready? Ready? Okay, I'm going to tell you.
Okay.
No.
Aware of it, and it is something that we need
you
to do.
All right. I'm going to talk to you about mine.
I'm all ears, Lisa.
All right.
I'm a
Connecticut resident forever, right? Since 1989, a long time. And when I was, and 20 years ago, I think I was 41 or something like that, 41, 40, I purchased a long-term care policy by MetLife. It was a fantastic policy. It had inflation, you know, ran with inflation, and it even had a drop in premium after I'm retired. It had all these bells and whistles, and I've spent a lot of money on it every single month, deducted from my checking account automatically. And it started around $200 a month, which, you know, when I was in my 40s, I thought, all right, I'll pay $2,400 a year. It's a lot of money, but I'm going to do it because it's worth it for me to have the peace of mind. I believe in long-term care. You know that I do a lot of and did a lot of I did a lot of private practice in the elder law and trust and estates field, and I feel that long-term care is an essential thing that we should have to protect our finances for our future. So, Tony, can I tell you the letter that I got over the weekend? I got a letter over the weekend on Saturday. It's interesting because it's on my desk because I'd like to make a complaint about it. Over time, the premium has hiked to $417 a month. I got a letter with this big thing wanting me to cancel my policy that it's now going up to $490 a month, $6,000 a year for my policy. And that I have no choice other than to cancel the policy or curtail the benefits or pay the money. I want to know how the insurance capital of this country, Connecticut, allowed this to happen to me as a premium holder for long-term care. And now I'm in my 60s.
Lisa, and I'll tell you what the frustration is that you have done your share as a policyholder in keeping the and paying the premium in the hopes that you never have to use that long-term care.
That's right.
But ultimately, you have put money into an ever-increasing premium. And this is the last shoe that dropped to say, look, we're going to increase by the increment of close to 100%, or you can just drop it. And for most people that have held a policy for a long term, because they have done the right things to protect their family and their assets
That's
and their
it.
Health ultimately, is you're now telling me after all of that, when I've never used
right.
it, you're going
right.
to jack my fees and
right.
then say you can just drop it. That is the ultimate insult in my mind. That's what's got my goat up and fighting for so many of our seniors and their loved ones to say, look, with the onset of concerns with COVID and dementia and Alzheimer's, there's a real concern to be able to have health care and not deplete your assets as you go older. This is the insurance industry and their bad accounting to say the premiums have increased. Less companies are undertaking and underwriting these accounts.
Oh, they
and
just want me to cancel.
You,
Tony, they just want me to cancel. They can't wait for me to cancel. I'm not canceling, by the way. I'm going to suck it up.
There is a commission that started that's kind of reviewing long-term care, and I believe that this is an issue that with the result of the letters that you've gotten and so many others, we're going to have to tackle this straight on and address this. And we have healthcare insurance concerns and costs. It has gotten unsustainable and unaffordable. The reason I brought it up is the fact that I am extremely concerned and I will be tackling this. And you stay tuned because the idea that people who have made the proper investment and did everything right.
I can send you my letter. I can
them.
Send you whatever you want off air. I'll send you the letter.
Absolutely.
I had to take a breath.
Top of this from many of your listeners, Lisa. I will stay on top of this as the ranking member on the insurance committee. I can make that commitment that we will be reviewing this long and hard to make sure what are the solutions for people to be able to maintain the coverage and conduct business, but at the same time, make sure that people that have held the policy as long as you have and many others like yours, like my mother-in-law, and can't afford to drop it and don't want
to. No way. There's no way I would drop it. There's no way.
What solutions do we have for them?
But it is insulting. There's no way I would drop it. You know what it is? They're sorry that they gave me this contract. And normally contracts either have built-in knowable foreseeable hikes or you can't raise the money. If I make a deal with you, I make a deal with you. I have to suck it up. I've already given you a price. I knew you were going to live a certain amount of life. I made my deal with you as an insurance company already based on a medical and an actuarial determination of about how long I thought you would live and your likelihood of actually using the policy. That's how I set my premium 20 years ago. You want to have occasional incremental increases because things change in life, okay. But more than doubling the premium, significantly more than doubling it over the period of time, that's outrageous. And not telling me. It's outrageous. And as people get older, very often they are less able to afford these policies. And also from where you sit, Tony, as a legislator, every person that doesn't have long-term care ultimately and inevitably is going to depend on the state to be able to fund their care. So it helps the state of Connecticut the more people that have long-term care coverage.
Without a doubt, and I'll leave it on the consumer standpoint, there are people who can afford, who can't afford not to have long-term care for their health and well-being, not only for themselves,
people,
but for their loved
many
ones.
People. That's right.
And that's the struggle, and that's the frustration I have is, unfortunately, people that have done the right thing by no fault of their own are being punished by these rate increases. And that, to me, is patently unfair.
All right, Tony, what else are you hearing from your constituents? 203-333. I'm so glad you brought that one up because that letter's right on my desk. 203-333-9422 is our number. We're chatting with State Senator Tony Wong. If you've got a question or a comment, something that's been bothering you on your mind that you think your state senator can help with, please feel free to pick up a call. I'm sure he would love to tackle it for you. So what else is on your mind? I understand the Republicans are upset about what they are deeming to be a spate of juvenile crime. My question for you is, what is the data? What is the actual statistics? Is this a real thing or sort of something exaggerated?
Well, I think the bottom line is it shouldn't just be a Republican viewpoint. It should be for every policymaker and their concern of a safer Connecticut. And the idea is, I remember my staff professor at Cornell saying, there are numbers, there are doggone lies, and then there's statistics. You take statistics, you can interpret and express different viewpoints. But what is clear is the fact that, you know, Hartford is on pace to have one of its deadliest years and decades with 29 murders as of October 2nd. New Haven's murder year to date is up 37%. The rise in car thefts and petty crimes has increased significantly. We have not only from a standpoint of crime, we have just a increasing belligerent behavior in regards to wilding, speeding, and traffic. There seems to be a kind of permissive culture where crime is percolating. But at the same time, really no solutions end in sight. And that's where we came up with taking a look that maybe we should look at crime and its causes and then address it with legislative, legal, court solutions. But also, for me, to look at some of the systemic causes. It's not just bad behavior. We have to take a look at crime's rise in the context of a COVID-19 environment where people are put into unique and challenging social and you know, economic dynamics. But we also need to look at a possible cause as the rise in substance abuse, the opiate addiction issue, and now the possibility of potential increased gambling addiction, as we saw with Representative DeMassa in West Haven. There are so many other pressures that cause crime to be a factor. And what I, as a Republican, but also as a legislator, along with many of my legislators on the Republican side, is to say, we have an issue. Let's try to address it with some legislative as well as some societal concerns. And let's not put our head in the sand and say there is no problem, because we can fight about data all we want and use it to our advantage one way or the other. But there is that perception, a perception of concern in regards to public safety, public health. And that is the concern that I'm trying to address, is we need to address that head on as a legislator, to say we're listening to the people, and that any concern to their public safety is an issue that merits our attention.
Well, I just want to say, we're chatting with State Senator Tony Wong, that that the FBI report that is done every year on crime shows that homicides and motor vehicle thefts did go up in 2020, while other crimes decreased. And that reflects a nationwide trend. And altogether, Connecticut's overall violent crime rate in 2020 was among the lowest in the nation, despite the fact that we did have definitely an uptick in homicides. Homicides in the state leapt from 77 in 2019 to 108 last year. Nationally, murder and non-negligent manslaughter rose almost 30%. And in Hartford, they went up. I know in Bridgeport, it's been bad. But in other crimes, believe it or not, it went down. Motor vehicle thefts in Connecticut, which hits suburbs particularly hard, shot up. Last year, the total of stolen vehicles was 7,295, compared with just over 5,000 thefts in 2019, an increase of more than 40%. And obviously, that does hit suburban areas more so disproportionately than other crimes, because we tend to have cars that are unsupervised. Maybe they're in a railroad lot or in a mall shopping mall lot, or sometimes on someone's own driveway. And people get lazy, they leave their key in, and somebody else drives away with them. And I think that that's really what happened in 2020.
Lisa, I'm very grateful that our violent crime data is down, but there is a disparate demographic concern or geographical concerns. Our cities are at significantly at risk. But I think what is also a point of concern, and this is where I approached it along with my colleagues, is we wanted to hear from our law enforcement. We wanted to hear from our prosecutors and public defenders and Department of Children and Families and experts that are on the forefront to get some insight. And one of the biggest concerns is the fact that a lot of these small crimes like theft and things like that, they lead to a permissive growth. And that's the concern, is we're not even prosecuting a lot of these cases or arresting in these cases because of our juvenile law applications. And I think that was another significant area for us in our proposal of a safer Connecticut, is let's take a look at our treatment and our process, and ultimately the reduction of recidivism among our juvenile crime and activities. It's a very sensitive matter, because, as I said, in the light of COVID, in the light of isolation and potential substance abuse, young people may make mistakes, and people do. And we don't want to put an individual that makes a once-in-a-lifetime mistake and have to pay that price for the rest of their life. I've been a big believer in second chance societies and reducing recidivism, but we're not even arresting a lot of these young children to give them a proper pathway to a better understanding, to make the proper investment in their life and in their careers and in their education. So what we need to address is, have we gone too far in the spectrum in regards to juvenile justice leniency, and what are some of the solutions that we need to address? I'll tell you one thing, beyond just the court system and the crime and punishment of juvenile crime, is we need to support our after school program agencies in all of our communities, from Wakeman Boys and Girls Club to McGivney, Cardinal Sheehan, and Hall, that provide after school programs for so many of our young people, provide counseling and mentoring. These are important parts that don't get enough funding, at least on my mind, that are providing outlets for young people, because young people without outlets and a perspective are going to be very emotional and act on the spur of the moment. That's the way the young brain works.
Well, I have to tell you, I was blown away. I was blown away, Tony, with chatting with State Senator Tony Wong. I was blown away a few months ago when I went to Jonathan Lett teaches at Hall, and he does this hip-hop after-school program. And I was in the gym with these kids, and I have to tell you, I was blown away with their enthusiasm, their energy, their talent, all of the good stuff. And then he showed me a room that had all these amazing computers and audio equipment where the kids come and they make their own videos. And they, so yeah. Basically they'll have somebody take a picture of them doing a dance, and then they'll go in and they'll make the video, and then they'll post the video on social media. And then some of them have gone on to become videographers that get paid for being able to do that. So I'm 100% in support of all that stuff. It's all great. It's great.
I visited the same program, Lisa, and it gave kids opportunity, a sense of seeing their future. You know, I grew up in a housing project, and I grew up in a city setting. I could have gone 6 degrees of separation in regards, but I had great mentors, great supporters, great parents that made sacrifices that told me to keep my head down and get an education and pursue the American dream. But so many of these kids are not given the opportunity or the chance to be able to aspire and achieve. So when we're looking at a safer Connecticut and we're looking at crime and punishment, it's important to address that, but it's also important in my mind that we address the solutions to preventing it. Where are we properly allocating our money to provide programs like you just described at Hall, which had corporate sponsorship for those video production machines? It's state-of-the-art sound room, but to watch those kids enjoy, thrive, and succeed and take great pride in themselves is the greatest satisfaction anybody could have. And why are we not looking at them as solutions as well, as part of our dynamic in looking at crime and punishment?
Thanks, Tony. State Senator Tony Wong joining us today on the Lisa Wexler Show. You be well. We'll circle back after the election a week from Tuesday. I know, Tony, you're not running this time, but I always like to remind people to get out and vote. Your absentee ballots are already available. You don't need an excuse for them this year in Connecticut. So if you just want to go to your town clerk and vote now because you want to, go ahead and vote. We need as much turnout as we can a week from Tuesday. Thank you so much, Tony Wong, for being on the show with us.
Thanks, Lisa. And you sound great on FM radio as well.
It's so great. 107.3. Fantastic. Thank you. All right. We'll be right back. Thanks, Tony. We'll be right back.